How do you actually know how many people are listening to your podcast?
Yeah, good question. We have used a service called PodTrack, which works with the PowerPress plugin, which is a podcasting plugin for WordPress. And that'll give you stats around.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko.
James Schranko.
Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here, and today I've got a special guest who is no stranger to the expertise of podcasting, and I think podcasting is a hot topic right now. So I went out and I tracked down my podcast partner's other partner, Luke Moulton. Welcome to the show.
How are you, James?
Or should I say Lukey? would that feel more familiar?
Yeah, it does actually. It feels pretty good. And former podcasting partner too, James. Timbo and I have kind of gone separate ways in the podcasting arena, but that's all good.
So I thought it would be pretty funny to have a podcast with you because we're both used to podcasting with Tim.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what will happen here. In our show, Tim is the one who sort of keeps the time and asks me the questions and pushes me around a bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it works in yours, I guess. Is that him in your show or are you more of the timekeeper?
I'm probably more the timekeeper, but he's definitely the pushy one.
Okay. Well,
Timbo knows I love him and love him dearly, as I'm sure you do, James.
I do. He makes me laugh. I mean, I think he carries our show, the one I do with him. It's his humour and his entertaining nature that I think makes it work. So could be interesting to see what comes out today.
Yeah, he's going to love hearing that too. No, he's got a great interview technique as well, I think. So he will continue to do well in podcasting, I'd say.
So let's talk about the topic of podcasting. You've been doing it for around about 3 years.
Sure have. I can't believe it's been that long, and it's been fantastic. I mean, getting to speak to people like yourself, James. I think we interviewed you in September 2010. It might have been, just I guess getting to talk to experts, learning from it, and certainly I guess building authority as well. It's been a fabulous vehicle for that.
Well, I remember when you asked me to do an interview. That was pretty much my first involvement in a more professional podcast. And by that, I mean you guys had the official bump in and the disclaimer bump out and an established show. And, you know, you booked a time with me and I remember you phoned me up and we talked. And I wasn't sure if it was live or not because you were calling from a studio. You actually went to a professional recording studio.
We were very, very lucky. Tim knew the producer of Hamish and Andy, so he was actually able to get us studio time at Fox FM here in Melbourne, and it was a very nice way to start a podcast. You know, we had a professional studio, and we were actually sitting in the same studio that Hamish and Andy would do their broadcasting from. So we were very, very lucky in the early days.
And for our overseas listeners, Hamish and Andy are a very popular duo in Australia. They're right up there. I guess they're quite funny, and you must have felt weird sitting in the same studio.
Yeah, I can certainly remember going in there, I think on a Friday, and they do this segment on a Friday called Pants Off Friday. And, you know, with radio, you never actually know whether they're just, you know, taking the piss or whether they're actually doing it. And they were just sitting in there in boxes, so... It was wonderful, and obviously I guess it sort of set the stage quality wise for the recording. You know, we actually had Sam who was the producer doing our sound as well. So you know we were really lucky to have get that quality from the start, and also actually inviting interviewees into the studio. It was a good way to sort of get a leg up. You know, we weren't just recording from our garage, and we were able to invite people into a professional space to do the interviews.
Well, that's a good discussion point because certainly when I came as a guest, it was the first time I'd heard terms like show notes. So it was really interesting from that perspective. But also straight after the episode aired, there was a wave of sales. So I realized the power of having that audience and the community. How do you think you built up such a strong community there? And what would you do differently if you are starting a podcast today, as many of our listeners will no doubt be entertaining straight after they find out why it's so important?
Oh, well, first of all, I think how do we build an audience? I really think it was one was consistency. Like doing it, we were actually doing it. We'd go into the studio probably once a month and record sort of four or five shows, and then drip them out obviously over the coming weeks. So it was just being really consistent. Getting good interviewees who had a really good story to tell. I think we also certainly tried to leverage their audience as well. Inviting people along that had an audience, probably like yourself, James. You had a bit of a list and were able to put it out there. So I think they're probably the main things. What would I do differently? I suppose for me, and one of the reasons why, perhaps for those of your listeners who listen to Small Business Big Marketing, probably know that I have recently left that podcast, and probably one of the reasons why is I don't really have the means to leverage that podcast. So I guess I put the cart before the horse, I guess. And I suppose I'd approach it differently in that I'd probably build up a range of products that are appropriate for my audience. You know, Timbo and I certainly did produce a few products here and there, but the focus was really always on the podcasting, not the product.
That is such a point. I'm going to jump in there because I have had a lot of to and fro discussion with Tim over the last year where I finally figured out the answer, that podcast is a traffic rather than a product. And for me, having a traffic source has been really beneficial for the rest of my business by building up that front door, letting people get to know you and being able to transport yourself to their smartphone so they can listen to you while they're jogging and walking. For them to go and investigate what else you have has been highly profitable for me. So I totally understand why if you only had the podcast, then that must be very frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. I think, it probably would have been a bit of a different story if it was sort of 6 or 7 years ago. I had a web development business here in Melbourne for about 7 years, and I sold that 4 years ago, and it was actually just after that, not long after that, that I started podcasting with Tim. And, if I had had that business, it certainly would have been podcasting would have been a fantastic platform to get my name out there. I mean, but target audience at that time was small businesses and providing websites to small businesses, not unlike obviously some of the services that you provide, James. So that would have definitely been a fantastic platform to be able to build authority, build trust, and attract my target audience. But I suppose, probably speaking fairly honestly, I got a little bit burnt out with service-based businesses or this service-based business. Certainly if I knew some of the things I knew now, I would have done things a lot differently, and that might not be the case. So I guess I never really went into the podcast with an intention of selling something off the back of it. It was really just initially a bit of fun. And yeah, it did end up doing well, but then I got to the position where it's like, oh, hang on, what am I leveraging here? I'm really not leveraging anything.
So the real key point here is that it's good to have a strategy when you're setting up your podcast, have an understanding of where it leads to and what comes next. Would you say that's fair?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think too, one of the big problems with podcasting as a medium is that quite often people aren't in a position to take action. So we're used to typical sales mediums, whether it be a video or a sales page, where you're actually trying to sell to the customer. Podcasting's really, I don't think, about selling. Sure, we can recommend products and services that we think are of good value, and maybe the listener will take that up. But I think it's certainly more about developing and building authority and reassuring the audience that you are worth working with, or your information is going to be good that you're selling off the back of it.
You're right. Well, from my own experience, I've been able to measure my podcast as causing sales because you're probably aware every single one of our transcriptions and every one of our emails to customers has a trackable link, and I can actually trace them back to goal conversions in my cart. And so I believe that marketing should be tracked and measured, but I really think branding is actually the new black. I think having really strong brand names, having a way to keep reaching your customer so that when they are ready to buy, they have a fairly quick recall of who you are, is good. And my tracking actually indicates that, yes, they do come and buy stuff, which is great. I would love to – I mean, this is good. This is like the podcasting strategy part that really no one talks about. Everyone talks about formats and how you actually set one up, and that's a great thing for us to discuss next perhaps. Yep. But I like the fact that we've covered some of the strategy elements and the pitfalls and what you'd do differently. It seems that a few years ago podcasting was a little less well known, but all of a sudden, I don't know whether it's because we brought it to the heart of my own community with a Fast Web Formula appearance, whether it's because so many of my own customers have engaged with podcasts now, but I'm seeing a lot of podcasts spring up. I've helped a few customers set up podcasts and they've taken to iTunes very, very well. Do you think that this is a growing trend, or is it in decline?
I think it's a growing trend. I mean, obviously the way that people consume media now is changing. You know, people want stuff on demand instead of being pushed at them, obviously in the case of commercial TV and commercial radio. So I think, you know, certainly iTunes isn't going anywhere, and I think podcasting is a very popular medium to consume content. I certainly think, you know, the likes of our peers, James, have certainly taken to it in Australia. You know, Ed Dale, Pete Williams, and there's been heaps and heaps of local podcasts that have been started up around business and marketing. So I definitely think it's an increasing trend, and obviously with where Apple's going with their technology as well, you know, the Apple TV and probably the Apple standalone TV that may well be coming out. I think it's only going to keep increasing in popularity.
Yeah, well, I've had an Apple TV for a while, and I can't imagine why every household in Australia doesn't have one. It's just incredible.
I've been wanting to ask you about your Apple TV, Jane.
Go for it. This is the great place. I want to talk about Apple, and I also want to talk about the iTunes secret ranking algorithm as well. Yeah, so let's talk definitely. Apple for a minute and iTunes.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, I understand that your internet connection is as bad as mine. How do you go when you download stuff on your Apple TV?
All we need to do is we need to think about what we want to watch at around about lunchtime or mid-afternoon, yeah. And we select something. And I have two separate internet connections here, which is something that I actually saw Jen Sheehan Facebook about once. Yeah. I thought, oh, that's so clever. And I looked around, and sure enough, there's about 10 phone lines into this place because, you know, like most large properties, it had sort of an office function in one part. So I actually set up one whole connection just for downloads and uploads, and that way I can download things for the Apple TV, and also I can upload all the videos that I'm taking, which is every single day, and I can run webinars on it, which is something I do every single day. And the family can still suck the other one dry. You know, they've got about 25 iPads and iPhones and iTouches and iMacs and MacBooks. And then we even have, you know, like a wireless printer and PlayStation. Yeah. It's just hammering that poor little thing. I don't know how many hundreds of gigabytes we use here, but I think we have up to 1,000 gigabytes on our combined two lines, and I damn well use it.
Wow. Nice. I think I might have to do that myself.
Get the second line. It's a no-brainer if you have such a poor connection. In fact, sometimes you can even throttle the two together between the, you know, join the modem somehow. We're not even fast enough to do that, unfortunately.
Nice. Well, I'm actually on wireless broadband, so it can get a bit sticky at times and expensive too.
Oh, yes. Well, that's it. So what do you think about the iTunes ranking algorithm? They don't publish it, like Google don't publish their algorithm. How do you get an iTunes show ranking well in the store, and does it make a big difference to the numbers?
Yeah, look, I think there's a number of things. I mean, I think Tim actually tried to or did get in touch with someone at Apple once, and they just quoted touch points. So I think there's a number of things that affect where you're ranked in iTunes. First of all, it is how many people are looking at your podcast iTunes profile, but probably more importantly, how many people are hitting the feed. So the RSS feed that goes along with iTunes, I'm pretty sure it's how many people are actually essentially hitting that feed and then downloading your podcast. So I think if you've got a list and you're able to push to that list, it's very helpful. But then I think the more people that subscribe, the better. We would certainly, with Small Business Big Marketing, we'd always sort of see a fluctuation. And the fluctuation, obviously, we'd go down in rankings when we hadn't put a podcast out for a while. So I think there's also a bit of frequency in there as well. You know, if you're frequently putting up podcast episodes, I think iTunes will tend to float you to the top.
Yeah, I've seen where you've had resurgences and it sort of came back and old episodes start to float around again and sort of give it a new life.
Yeah, and I don't know, that may be linking from, linking from more recent episodes back to older ones, and it may just be a new audience finding new episodes. And it may also be mentions, you know, if yourself and Tim have mentioned it as well, I think people tend to go looking and will download older episodes.
Well, I think that customers have a collection mentality, and they quite often say to me, "Oh, okay, well, I've just found your show and I'm working my way through from the start, you know, and I'm up to number X." So I think they actually do go back and replay the sequence.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm sure you've had the emails that say, you know, I'm going through your back catalogue and I've listened to every episode, you know, twice. So, yeah, definitely. I think people do go back for sure.
Now, what are your thoughts on how you tune towards the audience? So do you like to polarise, or do you like to sort of go with the grain and sort of work within the constraints? Both Tim and I have lost audience members. He lost an audience member for talking about his sphincter being tightened in excitement, and I lost one for a religious reference.
Santa Claus. Someone else and someone else, and we won't.
The Easter Bunny and someone else. But, you know, so I guess you could say they're sort of polarizing. What are your thoughts on that? Have you had any experiences like that too?
Yeah, look, I think definitely in the early days. I mean, we're not everyone's cup of tea, and I don't think you should try to, you know, you can't please all the people all the time. And I think it's really, I think if you aren't polarizing, then you're probably just middle of the road, which I don't think's a really good strategy. I think being yourselves and the people that enjoy your format and the way that you talk will gravitate to you, and they're the audience that you want. You really want passionate fans, and we've certainly seen with Small Business Big Marketing that you do build passionate fans that stick around, and they're the ones that email you and also recommend good content and support you, and there's going to be others that come and go, and I think it's really about the quality, and you know, yeah, I think it's good to polarize people. Tim can be pretty out there.
He can be, because he's a big buffer.
He'll just
say something crazy.
I'm glad we don't do it on video, because I'm cringing most of the time.
Well, you know what, he's actually said to me before, like, video ruins a good podcast sometimes. I've seen some shocking videos, and the amount of production level involved to make videos is substantially higher, and I know this. I've been making videos every single day lately, and I've been up-specking my gear, and you start to use up gigabytes instead of megabytes, and there's an editing process. Now, you had a guy doing the sound, and I have someone doing the sound on my Freedom Ocean podcast. How important is that? What sort of difference is that over you just sort of editing yourself from putting yourself in the view of someone who's thinking, okay, I've got products so I can make money from this. I want to increase my traffic with podcasts. I get the fact that I can do this with voice and have a pretty rapid authoring process. How much of a difference does having professional sound make to a show?
I think it really depends on the format. One of the tricky things for us was what we actually did in the early days was we'd do the interview, but we'd also do an intro and an outro, and quite often we'd actually jump in and split up the interview and put in little segments. And because we were recording in different environments, the continuity was pretty awful, and I was the one doing the editing, and you know. Let's be honest, I'm no sound engineer. We were actually getting complaints about the sound. You know, people would be listening to it in their headphones, and, you know, sound levels go up, they come down. And I think that certainly affected the quality. So definitely getting Liam on board, who's the sound engineer that does Small Business Big Marketing, was fantastic. That being said, I don't think people should consider that a barrier to entry. It really comes back to the format. You know, if you're recording from start to finish with the one microphone and maybe you're doing it over Skype or in the same room with someone, then I think it's pretty simple to press record on. Well, I use GarageBand or Audacity or Skype Call Recorder, and then just top and tail it. So I guess that's
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I'm on a crappy internet and I still run interviews with Call Recorder and Skype, because sometimes you just can't have the person on the other end recording their side, which is the ideal scenario, and we should talk about that. Talk about the double-headed recording. How does that work?
Well, we're actually doing it right now, which is pretty cool. So double-headed recording is, James, you're recording on your end. You're probably using something, you're probably using both Call Recorder and perhaps something else like Audacity. I'm actually recording on my end and I'm only recording my voice, and I'm recording it in GarageBand, but I could be using something like Audacity. And what we do after that is basically, James, you'll probably get your sound person to bring those two channels together. And what that means is basically it ends up better quality. You know, if our Skype connection drops out or it gets flaky, you don't hear that cut of thing happening, and you're able to bring those two channels together, and it sounds really good.
And let's talk about the how there. So you will actually, after this call, you'll export your recording of your side, and I will export my recording of my side, and you'll put yours in a Dropbox for me, won't you?
Correct, yeah. So I'll drop mine in a Dropbox, you'll drop yours in a Dropbox, and then you'll probably give it to one of your team members to edit.
Yeah, and they just add them together. And a handy technique at the beginning of these is just to both count down 3, 2, 1, and that's like the lineup of where the recording starts. Hey, I just wanted to ask you about stats for a second. Probably some of the listeners are saying, well, how do you actually know how many people are listening to your podcast?
Yeah, good question. We have used a service called PodTrack, which works with the PowerPress plugin, which is a podcasting plugin for WordPress, and that'll give you stats around number of downloads, number of subscribers, what episodes have been downloaded the most, where in the world. You know, it was really interesting getting some stats. I think we had 55% Australia, and then it went down through US, UK, and a lot of other different countries. So PodTrack.com is a good place to basically run your stats through, and that's it's a free service as well.
Have you got any numbers on the how many people were listening to the episodes?
Look, I'm not sure if Timo would be happy with me divulging, but it was certainly in the five figures a month.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, you know, I'm using Blueberry for statistics on my Internet Marketing Speed podcast, which is the one we're on now. And I will share some stats because I guess I'm my own partner in this one. So I'm just looking at last month, and I had 21,000 people listen to a podcast. So if you think about that, that's actually quite good reach for just one guy popping out a recording every couple of weeks. You know, I probably only put out two for the whole month. But looking at it, and this ties back to what you're saying before about people being able to buy things, 8,000 of those were from web browsers.
Wow.
And that means that most of my customers are sitting right there on my they're actually on my blog at the time or listening to it in a browser, so that they're more than likely able to buy something. There was a whole bunch of them with tablets and podcatchers. I'm not sure if I even know what that is. And then there was a few mobiles and a couple of TV set-top ones. And it looks like the majority of my users are using Windows and Firefox. And got a lot of – wow, I have a lot of people in Germany of all places. So who knows why? But, yeah, you know, obviously people from Australia, the UK, the US. But it's worth knowing this, and this is also a free metric, and it comes with the Blueberry PodPress thing. You just create an account and you can start tracking by episode as well. Okay, well, so far, so good. Do you think that podcasting is for everyone, or is it something that, only some people should consider?
Well, look, I think it depends on the way you like to communicate. I mean, some of us are writers, some of us are talkers. Timbo is definitely a talker. You know, some people are happy to sit in front of a video camera. So I think it really comes down to what medium you're most comfortable communicating in. I think it also depends on the format, James, and maybe that's another good point that we can talk about next. And I guess, you know, whether if you're going to sit by yourself in front of a microphone, personally, I think it can get a bit stale after a while. Certainly having a co-host helps, but then also getting in interviewees like you're doing with this podcast, James, is a good way to mix it up a bit and get some variety. And also, I mean, you know, I personally couldn't sit in front of a microphone and wax lyrical week after week. And I think it's I certainly found it with Small Business Big Marketing, found it helpful to get in interviewees to have a chat to.
Okay, well, let's further develop this format. Firstly, I'll give you a backstory on this particular podcast. I installed the podcasting plugin so that I could put my interviews up. I did a lot of interviews with people like John Carlton and lots of people I'd met when I traveled overseas about their particular thing, everything from using competition marketing, et cetera. And then what I did is I thought, you know what, I could probably make my blog more feature rich and actually turn it more into a podcast. So I started actually reading out my posts.
Yep.
So it was just me reading the post. So whereas a lot of podcasts will have the podcast and then transcribe it, I started with the transcription, which was my blog post, mm-hmm. and just read it out. And then when I actually hooked it up to iTunes, it retro-indexed all of my interviews. So by tagging them all podcast, I was able to backfill my catalog. Even though I did it in the last 12 months, I've got years' worth of episodes there. And although I don't publish very often, it's got a good variety. It's either me reading a post. Sometimes my podcast is only 2 minutes long. It could be a very, very short post. And then I've got a lot of interviews. So if you don't have a co-host, then interviews are the way to go. Now, one of the benefits of having your own show is that you have 100% control. You can take it any direction you want, and you can monetize it fully with any device that you like. There are obviously good point, constraints, James. Yeah, with partnerships, and you and I have both done that. With partnerships, you have to consider the sum of the team. You know, everyone's a stakeholder then, and you have to work together. And there may be compromise at times, but also from that, you can leverage the strengths of each other. So, what other formats have you seen? Would there be a top three formats that one might consider?
I think you've probably covered them, James. So there's the one person sitting individually in front of a microphone. Two. Co-host, so chatting to each other, and then three, the interview, which is can be obviously a combination of two people chatting to one or one person, a bit like Mixergy. You know, he's basically getting people on and interviewing them. So I think they're probably the main three, and then there's obviously variations on those.
Okay, so if someone's listening to this, they want to get podcasting today, what equipment do they need? How do they get going?
It's really quite simple. I mean, a good microphone is good, but you don't have to go out and spend, you know, a lot of money. I use a Blue Yeti, but before that, I was using something that's not quite as expensive. I think the Blue Yeti is a couple of $100. And then basically a recording app or piece of software, Audacity. Audacity's free. I'm on a Mac, so I use GarageBand. GarageBand comes with the Mac. And then to publish it, basically WordPress with a podcasting plugin. Then you just have to get yourself set up in iTunes. People actually think that they actually have to manually go into iTunes and push out an episode every time you do one. But iTunes actually just references your WordPress blog and picks up you'll set up a custom podcasting feed, and iTunes then just syndicates that content automatically.
I think some eyes just glazed over then. Referencing feeds.
Where's the phone book?
Even I don't understand. No, I think what you're saying is that you submit it to iTunes once, and from then on they'll go and find it when you put new stuff on your blog.
Correct.
Yeah, and on your blog there'll be a little encoding section at the bottom of the post where you paste the link to wherever you've loaded the MP3 to, and I use Amazon S3 for that. Did you use the same or something different?
Yeah, absolutely. Amazon S3 was the way to go. We did actually have it sitting on all the audio files sitting on a Hostgator account, which when we started to get big, it just didn't work anymore, basically.
Wow. Yeah, that would have been a bit of a bandwidth compromise. I like to host all my media away from the server that my sales sites are sitting on because I like my sales sites to stay up.
Yeah. Yes, well, we it's one of those things that we figured out along the way, James.
Now, just tell me one more thing is, if you're going to do the interview thing, is it hard to get people to do an interview with? And, you know, do they need much arranging in terms of what they have to do to contribute? Because they're not tech savvy. They may not even understand what it is that a podcast is supposed to be doing. How do you approach it from the interviewee point of view?
Well, I suppose, as we mentioned, you can try and get people to record locally, but really, you know, as you've probably done most of your interviews, James, you just use a plugin to Skype called Call Recorder, and it just records the interviewee's audio, and it actually records it in a separate channel so that your audio guy or you can actually go and muck around with the audio to make sure it sounds good. But I suppose how do you get interviews? I suppose in the early days we were lucky, I suppose, with the draw card of having a good studio. But then it was as we developed authority and started ranking well in iTunes, we were able to show people, okay, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is, you know, we're ranking number one in iTunes for in the business section. We've got X number of listeners. We'd love to get you on the show. But I think, you know, I think it's just about asking. I think people are, more often than not, people are just flattered to be asked to be interviewed and to talk about an area in which they're an expert.
Yeah, good point. So you've got the interviews and you start to publish them to your blog and they go up to the iTunes. I just want to step back one layer there. In iTunes, if you're going to set up a podcast, do you have to target very tightly or do you go broad when you're setting up a show? I mean, you chose a small business target for marketing. Is that right? For small business, big marketing?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, now, did that restrict a medium or large business from the radar? So you really just drilled down on that versus the other podcast, I Love Marketing. They're sort of got a broader catchment, I think. They're just saying, well, we'll just take on the whole of marketing, regardless of business, personal. We'll just cover that broad topic. What do you think the approach could be there for someone looking to set up their own podcast?
I think if you're just starting out, it's probably best to try and niche it down. I mean, there's pros and cons. I mean, the longer that you do a podcast, I guess the longer that you are trying to find new things to talk about, and sure that the broad aspect is attractive. But I think if you're trying to leverage, when you first publish your podcast, if you're trying to get leverage and trying to get into a particular space, then I reckon niche it down.
Okay, cool. Okay, one final question. This is a weird one. How important is it to have it absolutely perfect? Because I know there's perfectionists on the call, and I had a recent episode where my interviewee was eating breakfast at the time.
Yeah, Noah Kagan. I'll listen to that one. It's a good one.
We were pretty much recording, and then partway through, he said, "Man, this is good stuff. Are we recording?" And you know, I'd had Call Recorder running anyway, and we were just casually chatting before the interview, and the chat just turned into good content. So I actually just went with it, and I thought, you know what, I don't think the customers will mind. And I got good feedback from it. Have you ever had situations like that, or do you think that's unprofessional?
I think a lot of people have a mental barrier to podcasting and a lot of things because they believe that they have to do it perfectly. I think you should really just get out there and start shipping and start creating content and not worry too much about being perfect. God bless his heart, Timbo is a bit of a perfectionist, and I think that's good because I'm not, and I think that's certainly, you know, making sure that Small Business Big Marketing was of a high standard, I think, was good. But I don't think you should do that at the sacrifice of not doing it. I think you should, I really think you should get out there and give it a go and basically turn the microphone on and have a crack. And, yeah, don't worry about, you know, if Skype starts dropping out and it goes all crackly, don't worry. If your interviewee's eating breakfast, I listened to that episode and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I also read the transcription as well. So, you know, I think it ended up being fantastic content.
Yeah, we in that one, I just pasted the transcription as the blog post. So we did the recording and then I just had it transcribed. I pasted it in. And then the team actually made up a video by putting the audio and some pictures together, and we got to publish that on YouTube as well. And to top it off, this week we've been running a Facebook campaign pointing people back to the interview, and that's a really nice little side doorway of promoting my guest.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the Facebook campaign? I'm interested.
Yeah, well, the person who I interviewed, Noah, is quite well known in the startup industry, and to target those sort of potential customers who perhaps know Noah but don't know me, we have Facebook campaign targeting that particular blog post. So they click on an ad on Facebook and they come to the interview under the context of a free interview with Noah Kagan and James Schramko. So they come from Facebook back to the blog, and then if they like that, the hope is that they opt in. And I have seen my opt-ins increasing, and then they become a future subscriber. And I can see that my views or my listening stats for that particular episode are increasing. So it also, I think, pulled a page one listing on Google for his name, which is certainly my intention. And then we've supported it with a press release. So we have it's actually a process called authority leverage. And that's what I do after I do a podcast or a blog post. And it's the process of really leveraging that. And I think that's pretty cool little process. It involves a few bits and pieces. You'll also notice there's an image in that podcast episode, which has been Pinterested.
Yeah, I think you... You alluded to this probably.
You're probably gone quiet because you're writing notes down, are you?
No. You gave away this process on Freedom Ocean, James. I believe the similar sort of process of what you go through after you've interviewed.
Exactly, and I made a mind map of it and turned it into a product, and I just gave it to all the members of Fast Web Formula yesterday, and they're pretty excited about it.
Nice. Can I this might be digging a bit too deep, but I'd like to go back to your Facebook campaign and just have a little bit of a quick chat around how do you measure the ROI of that campaign? Do you put a value on an email address sign up?
Yes, $1.
That makes it easy.
So I just put a trackable Google Analytics trackable link, and I give the Facebook advertising team, which is Jen's team, Jen Sheehan, FB Ads Lab, fantastic, the most incredible. I give them like 5 tracking links so that they can use different tracking links for each campaign. And then I just have to log into Google Analytics, look up goals, and I can tell my conversions, and I can go back to them and say, well, this one here is working. Number C is getting the best conversions. Whatever you're doing for that one, do more of that. And this other one getting nothing, and so on and so forth. So it's pretty exciting. It's totally trackable. And let's call it a dollar per subscriber, the value to me. I'm happy to invest. Now, I was running a campaign for my Fastweb Formula pre-launch, and I built up a list of 500 and something people from Facebook just sent into the squeeze page to tell them that they'll be sent an email when we launch. and I've been able to convert some of that traffic into paying members. Now, on a recurring monthly membership, my campaign will be well and truly in the black. It'll be not hundreds, it'll be probably thousands of percent in a year from now.
Speaking of which, how's the Fast Web Formula launch going?
There's 258 members a week after launch, so it's going really well.
Fantastic. Well done.
Yeah, very happy with that. Great community. We talk about all these sort of things. In fact, podcasting is one of the hot topics right now in there, and that's partly inspired our conversation. It's very timely. And, you know, I'm saying that it's really impacted my business because when I survey people, one of the questions I ask them is, why did you buy? And quite often they say, I started listening to Small Big Business Big Marketing. From there, I went to Freedom Ocean. From there, I went to Fast Web Formula. And from that, I've come here. So wow. I know that, I mean, I can track it. They actually type this for me. In fact, they preface that with, hi, James, I know you really like tracking, so here's the story. And they actually list it all out for me. Now, I've had a lot of members of my community have followed through from that original podcast episode that I did with you, which I think resulted in Tim and I setting up the second one because he approached me about that, which has just kept developing and growing. And now we've just up to episode 40. We've just recorded episode 40, and I think it's starting to mature and find some legs. So because I do have those back-end products and services, it's quite effective for me. And I think anyone with an established business should look at it. The customers who I've helped set up podcasts in other niches have done spectacularly well with it. So, you know, I want to thank you for sharing some of this insights. It's rare to get someone with 3 years' experience with a very successful show, the most successful show in Australia for the business category, to share these ideas. And I really appreciate that, Lukey.
It's a pleasure, James. Thanks for inviting me on.
Now, there is one other topic that you are a specialist at, amongst many, I'm sure. I know you're good at getting haircuts, but, you're a bit of a techno expert on gadgets and tips and tools and stuff, and I'm wondering if I could invite you back for a future episode to discuss that sort of stuff.
Well, I'd love to, James. That'd be great.
Awesome.
Well, we'll go head-to-head on some of our favourite tools.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to see if I can have less tools than you. That's
my goal. I reckon having listened to quite a few of your podcasts, James, I think you use more tools than what you'd like to admit.
Well, you know, if you're looking at old episodes, I probably don't use those tools anymore. I like to ditch tools if they no longer serve my purpose. So.
Before we do the recording, just go back and have a look at Traffic Grab at the RSS section of Traffic Grab and have a good think about it.
Well, you know, that's Traffic Grab 2's coming out, and I think you'll be delightfully surprised at the elegant simplicity of it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because, you know, when I go to Manila, we actually pull out a huge piece of paper and we list down every single tool that we use in our business and we see what we can cross off it based on the three rules. And, like, rule number one is do we absolutely have to have this tool or, you know, we can't live without it? And if it fails that test, it doesn't even go to number two. So
I love that process, and I think probably one we can talk about more. But it's a good process to go through. That purging process is asking about every single thing that you use day to day. Do you really need it, or is it just a distraction?
In business, question everything. That's what my mentor drummed into me. Question everything, every single assumption. So I'm looking forward to that episode. And thanks again, Lukey.
Pleasure, James. Thank you.
And by the way, have you got any sites or ventures that you wanted to plug in the show? Have you got somewhere to send people?
Well, for the moment, they can go to lukemoulton.com. That's MOULTON.com. That's a very unloved blog, but until I have something else, people can go and check me out there.
Thank you very much.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.